Okay. That's a little
difficult. That's on my
list. So in our last two classes, we were kind of going over the introduction. And we, you know, we asked the question, what does evangelism mean to us, without actually looking up a definition? And we looked at some things, kind of how the word can be used. And today we're going to start in lesson one. Lesson one, what is our attitude? You might be wondering, you know, why would we start the study with this first lesson, talking about our attitude? We haven't really got into a whole lot of, actually, the word evangelism. So why our attitude? I want to suggest to us that our attitude is going to be one of the most important things when it comes to this subject. Without the right attitude, it's not going to matter what we learn. We must be willing to use what we learn. So, and we know this is true. Take, for example, maybe those that you've talked to. We as students know this as far as the gospel. No matter what one learns, if they're not willing to obey it, if they don't obey it, then it's of no use. So, I want us to consider our attitude about this subject. I hope as we go through the other lessons, we might grow in our understanding of evangelizing and its importance. Now, as we study this subject, our definition of evangelism might change. So it's very important at this point that we realize that no matter what this definition is, we're a tool that can be helpful. So this will help us. This is why it's so important that we have the right attitude about this. Now, we're going to discuss this more in other lessons, but faith is the center point of evangelism. Our trust in who Jesus is and why He came should be our driving force. Our knowledge and attitude towards growth in knowledge is what will help us be useful. And we have to be able to share this knowledge with others and be willing to do this. And this will allow them to either gain faith or, as we'll see later on, strengthen faith. So let's start in Matthew 25 just to get some thoughts on our attitude. Now, Matthew 25, we're going to start around verse 14. This is what is called the parable of the talents, or I kind of think of it as the parable of the abilities, because that's what it's talking about, part of it. Verse 14, it says, "For it is just like a man about to go on a journey, who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them." So let's stop there for a minute. What does it say that this master did?
Entrusted.
Oh, okay. So he entrusted his possessions to them, to his slaves.
Something valuable to him.
Yes, something valuable. So do we as Christians consider this, that our Master has entrusted us with His possessions? So let's continue. In verse 15, it says that to one He gave five talents, to another two, and to another one, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. It says that he gave the slaves different amounts. So, what did the verse say the reason by his giving one of them one of them two, one of them five? What was the reason that it wasn't the same amount?
According to their ability.
Okay, so it had to do with their ability, according to their ability. Now, in verse 16 and 17, it said that, or the two men in verse 16 and 17 had something in common. Went one page over. I didn't. It said, immediately the one who had received the five talents went and traded with them and gained five more talents. And in verse 17 it said, in the same manner, the one who had received the two talents gained two more talents. So we see that these two men immediately did something with these talents, the money, and they doubled their amount. So they used their abilities in this case. Now all three men, and if y'all have any questions, y'all just or comments, just jump on in. All three men had different amounts. Now the one talent man, what was the problem with him? What did he do with his talent? Okay, he buried it. Verse 18 said that, but he who received the one talent went and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. So is this what we do with our abilities? I'd hope not. In verse 21 and 23, it shows that the master was pleased with the five-talent man and that he was pleased with the two-talent man. It said that, you know, well done, good and faithful slave. And again, this wasn't the issue here is not just the abilities, because the problem wasn't necessarily just because he was the one talent man. That's what the problem was. The problem was his willingness to use his ability. Now, that might have been some of the reasoning by why he was only given one. I don't know. It doesn't really say. But, you know, that's where the problem lies, was that he was not willing to use his ability. Yes, sir?
Don't worry. See his true attitude when we get out of 24. We're going to see what he thought about the master and why he motivated his actions.
Right. Yes, sir.
That's important.
Yes, sir.
That's, I think that's where you're going.
Yes, sir. Yes,
where
we're going. Yes, sir.
Well, I was going to kind of say the same thing. The two slaves that increased, they understood their master, and they wanted to please their master, and their attitude was that of pleasing the master.
Yes.
And I think in a lot of times, you know, Steve started the marriage and divorce and remarriage class with the same type idea of attitude, and too many times people want to put their own thinksos into a subject, and if this groundwork is laid on the beginning, it kind of takes most of that out of the picture. You're still going to have people that want to say, well, I think, or I believe, or I feel,
right.
But yet if we focus our concentration on what God says and what He wants us to do and what the examples that He's left us are, then that eliminates or helps to eliminate those things.
Okay, good point. Anybody else?
You think there's any such thing as a no talent person?
I don't say
ability person.
Didn't say it in reverse.
No. Everybody's got abilities.
Somewhat of ability. Correct.
And there's an example right there.
Right.
Okay, the one talent.
I think there's also some significance to the amount that Jesus uses in this story. You know, a talent was, I'll note that it was 6,000 denarii, and a denarii was a day's wages.
A lot of money, wasn't it?
Yeah, so a talent was around $300,000. So the five-talent guy had $1.5 million given to him. I mean, that's no, and one talent man had $300,000. I mean, that's no small amount.
Yeah.
And we don't need to sell ourselves short on our own abilities.
Good point.
We've been given a lot, and we need to recognize that.
Yeah, because that's a lot of it is maybe the recognition or, you know, recognizing what our abilities are. Because we can easily, like we've mentioned in some of the other classes, we don't really know how we're going to be an influence on somebody else. And what I mean by that is some of the things we do, if we're living like we should and we're trying to be the example that we should be, some of the things we might think of as something small or insignificant might not be to someone on the outside that's looking, because it might be answering something they have in their thoughts or something going on with them. So, you know, and we'll get to a point again where we talk about teaching by example and actual direct teaching. But, you know, these are both things that we could be considering, you know, handling our abilities, because it's also going to be in the way that we act, the way that we can influence other people, that hopefully leads to being able to talk to them more. Good comment. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? But that is a good comment about the value. So I think that's what Doug was talking about. You know, when these guys were entrusted with something that was of great value, and so are we if we think about it in the right manner.
It's pretty sobering to think about. If we get to Judgment Day and we say, "Here, Lord, I've kept what you've given to me, and I haven't increased," that's going to be a bad statement to have to make.
Yeah, so if we think of that in that way, maybe hopefully it can help motivate us, and at least, you know, this is something we don't have to consider for ourselves. We're going to have to evaluate ourselves, and we need to be honest with ourselves. And
what's interesting, if we make the master God,
mm-hmm.
and we make this kind of a prelude to judgment, then the idea of being a hard man, that gets some justification that there is a hell, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes back to reverence. What you were talking about is the attitude in Ecclesiastes 12, the last two verses there, talks about the whole duty of man is to fear God.
Fear God.
Have, you know, respect and reverence for who he is and his word, and to keep his commandments. And we've been studying Psalms in ladies' class, and in Psalm 119, verse 5, "Oh, may my ways be established to keep thy statutes." And verse 38 says, "Establish thy word to thy servant as that which produces reverence for thee." And then the next verse talks about keeping, you know, so that I may, you know, keep your commandments. And I think, you know, we can come to have faith, but as James says, without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, I think it goes back to our attitude towards God and, you know, his word and whatever he says, establish that in me, let me do it, you know, and do it for the right reason, you know,
right.
Because we are.
And that's very important, right, the right reason. I mean, because, well, and that's a good point, Linda, because we got to, you know, I think we can easily get to a point where I use the term forget. We don't really forget, but in a sense we do. We're slacking things, to me, I think about that the way that God's put things in our place to be reminded of things. I mean, take the Lord's Supper, for example. Is it that we, because we say we do this in remembrance, oh, did we forget who he was? Well, no, because we're here because of that, but we don't always really think about and really consider, you know, what has been done for us, and then to reflect upon ourselves and see what that should drive out of us. Because it, and when I say drive, I don't mean, it shouldn't be something forceful. It should be something that we want to do out of recognition of this great love that was shown for us. All good points. Thank you all. So, like what Ennis was saying, when we get to this one talent man, it said, basically he was offering up excuses, wasn't he? And the master said in verse 26 that he was a wicked and lazy slave. And then in verse 30 he said that he was a worthless slave. So, do we use our abilities? Or do we bury what's been entrusted to us? You know, maybe we're doing what we can. That's, again, that's something that you're going to have to decide. And but let's be honest with ourselves. And we're going to get to a part in our lesson. Not this one, probably the next lesson or so. As far as growing or maturing. Because we're going to see the importance of that in order for us to be able to do this. I mean, think about that. Think about abilities. If we all work, so your abilities in the workplace, if you're going to be productive or, you know, something that's good for that master, if you will, you know, then you're going to have to, number one, use your ability. But not only that, we train that ability. We maybe we grow it. We look to things. We try to be better at doing certain things. And that's what we need to do as Bible students.
Dedicated.
Dedicated. That's a very good word. When we get in, because again, when we get into the definitions, that's what we're going to see about this ism part of our word. So that's very good, and it's dedicated, because it's going to have to do. It's going to show something about us and what we're willing to do. You know, do we really believe in this? This is something that really means something to us. Does it show in the way that we do things? But again, I want us to recognize. I don't want somebody to get to the point and they're saying, oh, I know I'm supposed to do this, and then just get so frustrated and shut down. We have different abilities. Don't think that because we can't get up there and have the knowledge of somebody else or be able to talk to somebody like so-and-so does, or don't let that stop us. Because, you know, if we think in that way, it's going to stop us. Some people are going to have more ability than us, and that's okay. But we've got to, on the other hand, make sure that we're not using that as an excuse to do nothing, like the one talent man.
So practice, too.
Practice.
Like
well, practices.
You start off maybe not that good at leading singing, but as you continue, you get better at leading singing, and pretty soon you're as good as you are.
No, I'm still one talent man.
Fair to say that we're, from the story, we're judged on our efforts.
Right.
Our efforts, not our results.
Right, right. Yeah, because it's, exactly, it's our efforts. That's what has to do with our ability. The results is out of our control. I mean, for the most part. I mean, now if we don't do anything, we know what results we're going to get. But sorry about that. Yes, ma'am?
No, that's okay. I always thought that it's rather interesting that the master calls him wicked. Because wickedness is something that we associate as heinous. You know, a murderer is wicked. A child molester is wicked. You know, not somebody who just kind of doesn't do anything.
Didn't do
we
something.
Don't associate that with wickedness. And I think it's interesting that he does.
Right. So that tells us something about how he feels about that.
Yes. Right? He's very... No, I can't.
Pardon me?
Yes,
judgmental.
No, that wasn't quite the word I was going for. My mind was like, that's okay.
Back to verse 24.
That's okay.
This is his attitude. You go back to verse 24, then you can see where the master is coming from whenever he's talking about wicked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because in verse 24, talking about where he said that he told him that I knew you were a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So he was... You know, saying these certain things to him, but it's basically just excuses.
Because the other two slaves have the same master,
mm-hmm.
and their attitude yes is a good word. Are you a glass half full or a glass half empty? And so I think to me, the one talent man was a half empty. Kind of attitude where it was negative as far as his outlook.
Right.
Instead of looking at the positive and wanting that praise from like the other two did.
He was fearful. He said he was afraid. And that's a very negative mm-hmm. attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, so that my mind went blank too.
might have motivated the others also.
Right, the right kind of fear. I'm sorry, somebody else. Yeah, the right kind of fear.
That's exactly what the writer wants us to know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the way he feels about laziness and those things.
But look at verse 30.
It is a serious thing.
Yeah, so it'll motivate us.
Nothing.
Right.
Then
this is the outcome.
Right. Yeah. Like we don't care. You know, that's the whole thing.
To what, Doug?
I said, look at verse 30. There's your...
Oh, sin in the outer darkness.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Because it's worthless. No. Worthless is just means of no use to them. So we got to think of that.
And the sin, the wording, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's the same
judgment.
Wording that's used
yes.
for hell.
Yes.
So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Same wording there.
Yes, it is.
Evidently, you know, not only did he not increase, he didn't use what he had, and therefore he was not faithful in even what he had.
Right.
Much less gaining. So he was really wicked because he didn't even value what he had. So as to verse 27, I've always struggled with, you know, to put it in the bank, and I would have, you know, well, even in his own self is what I come up with. I could be totally off, you know, the mark. But he did not even in himself be faithful, you know, in using, much less be busy to gain. This is not the Lord's not talking about money here.
Oh, right.
You know.
Right.
So he didn't even use what he had
right.
to be a faithful slave. He was just a wicked slave. He was not faithful in anything. And so in my judgment, I could be wrong. I I've always struggled with verse 27.
Well, And I kind of think of this, when you think about it, kind of in a sense of the first two, because of the way they did things. It said, I mean, they were given this task and they reacted. They did something. So you've got that example. Really, what the emphasis wasn't on the amount of their ability. I mean, it shows it because that helps explain some things. But it shows that they took their ability and they, you know, doubled what was given according to their ability. But this other guy, he didn't do anything. and these excuses and everything else. You know, sometimes this laziness and stuff, couldn't you think of it as maybe possibility of selfishness? These other guys weren't thinking of theirself. They were thinking of the task. I need to do what my master needs me to do. And, I mean, it doesn't really say here on the one talent man, but and could that be part of his attitude? You know, because we can think of reasons why not to do things, and then when we're not doing that, a lot of the times it's coming out of because we're thinking of ourselves and not thinking of what we should be doing. That's just a thought. I mean, it doesn't say anything about that there. I'm just something to think about.
24 says, I knew that you were this kind of, you know.
Yeah.
So he's seeing himself.
Well, you do think yourself, verse 30, I don't want to be cast in outer darkness. That's self all the way, isn't it?
But that's not being selfish. That's just being wise.
Self-preservation. You know, yeah. Another point may not be pertaining to exactly the text, but when it talks about taking the talent away from the one talent man, it is true. If you observe, and if you've been around people very long, if they don't study God's Word, if they don't use the knowledge they have or maintain the knowledge they have, it leaves them and they fall away. You know, they because they don't value,
right.
You know, what the Lord has done for them. They don't value what their abilities are, and so therefore they diminish in faith, and they diminish in productivity, and until some, they just become absolutely worthless for the Lord.
That's a good point.
That's kind of how I always read verse 27. Is there's a minimum expectation, and there's a minimal amount of growth that we can strive for. Just keeping steady in the whole of what you have. Maybe it's just coming to services so you can see folks and be edified by others. I mean, there's a minimal amount of growth and effort that the Lord expects.
Oh yeah.
You know, Craig, there's an understanding also in this passage that the master, it doesn't say the master gave them any instructions.
Right.
He gave them the talents and he went on his journey.
He just entrusted them with it.
He entrusted them with it, but they knew the ones that were good and accepted and he said, you know, good and faithful servant to, they knew what they should do with it.
Good point.
And I think there's a point there of you know, if you're a follower of God, if you're a follower of Christ, if He is your, if He is your master,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's an expectation that you should know, and you should learn what's expected of you.
Yes. Good point, Jeff. Any other thoughts or comments?
I just found it interesting. Also, you were talking about his excuses. He blames the Lord. And, you know, so many people, when things come, are they found to be in the wrong. They give excuses. They blame others, and sometimes they even blame God. If God had no, you know, did this, and this, then I would have blah, 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 you know. And if you've been around very long, you will hear it.
Okay, so we see here, you know, this idea of our ability. So if we think about that, think about what the Lord's entrusted us with, then just be careful and honest how we handle these things. And just something to think about. There, you know, there's one thing that's unique when it comes to our master. The text doesn't explain here about this master and everything. And I don't want to try to take, you know, there's a danger of trying to put too much into what the parable says. But just think about it. The master that we serve is a master that we chose. We chose this master. So we need to think about that. We chose him to be our master. does it show? Does it show? Do we, you know, really trust in the things that he says? And are we doing something for the cause of Christ?
If we decide to put our hand to the plow, we should be plowing.
Okay. Yes, sir.
It enforces.
Let's look over, while we're in Matthew, let's jump over to Matthew 10:32 for a second. And let's read verses 32 and 33. It says, "Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies," I get my stutter back here. "But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven." So, something for us to think about. Do we want Christ to confess us or deny us? So, our actions, the life that we're striving to live, and the use of these abilities, again, I want us to understand abilities. I'm thinking of it in the sense it can be our example. It can be teaching. But when we use our abilities, it's not just limited to what we're thinking here, where we've started this subject as teaching those that have no idea or that are lost. But we also use abilities we know with one another, or when we come together and different things like that. So I want us to think of that too. So these are all abilities. I don't want us to... We'll see here later, well, further in our lessons, we're going to have more to say about who is being taught and who does teaching and all the different things. Yes, sir.
Repent, confess, be baptized. And it seems like this is not just a one-time thing here. It's just talking about your life, your way of life, the way you confess all the time, confess by the way you live, by the way you talk, by the way you behave yourself.
Right, and Acts 2, after 38, you know, after they heard this, they were pricked to the heart. And, you know, they were told, what shall we do? You know, repent and be baptized. And then in 41, 42, we see that they were continuing in this teaching, in the apostles' teaching. So it doesn't stop right there. We want someone to get to that point, most definitely. But it doesn't stop for us there. Because then, now that we've known to the... come to a point of knowing to where we're saved, now we want to stay saved.
Tell others.
And be capable of helping others. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good point. How am I doing on time? Okay. As far as our attitude, is there any more comments on the parable of the talents? No. Okay, well, as far as our attitudes, I'm going to ask Ennis, because I know it's something he always brings up. Ennis, what's the two greatest commandments? That's right. Because I appreciate that, Ennis. I know you bring that up a lot. I put some of the verses down there that we can see this idea. And what does Jesus say about these commandments?
The whole law is summarized. The whole law actually.
Okay. Okay, so it summarizes, or the law and the prophets depend on this attitude or idea. Let me get to where I'm looking for. Let's look at Matthew 22:40. Well, let's start in 37, actually. It says, and he said to him, 36, yeah, teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love your neighbor, or you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and the foremost commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depends the whole law and the prophets. So it says that the whole law and the prophets are depending on loving God and loving neighbor. So does this show the importance of the commandments?
Pretty important.
Okay.
They're all based on that. That's foundation.
Yes, sir.
This is important.
So what should our attitude towards that be?
First thing in our minds should be, before anything else, for ourselves especially.
So I guess the next question is then, who's our neighbor? Yes, ma'am.
Right there in the text, before we get there,
okay.
I find it very interesting that...
Which verse you in, Linda?
The very end of Matthew 22.
Okay.
We were talking about that in the whole law. The very next area is where Jesus is talking to the Pharisees. And they sit in the seat of Moses. In other words, for the Jews, the Pharisees were the teacher of the law, and you know they were to tell what the law meant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then, because of their hypocrisy, Jesus deals with their hypocrisy. They knew the law. They sat in the seat of Moses, and yet their attitude of loving God and loving neighbor was what come down to the point, mm-hmm. you know, because even though they sat in the seat of Moses, but their attitude towards loving God and loving neighbor was not right. And so, therefore, Jesus goes through all these hypocritical woes.
Yeah, it goes through all the different woes.
To those, you know, and blind and, you know, just vipers. I mean, he really calls them for what they are. They're a bunch of snakes, you know, because they don't really love God and love their neighbor.
So that's a good point, Linda. So that tells us something about our attitude, even if we know things. It's still going to have to do with how we apply stuff, how we view things, you know, loving God and loving our neighbor. Good thought. So who is our neighbor? And where are we at? We're in Matthew. Let's turn over to Luke 10. In Luke 10, verse 20, we'll go to 29. It says, but wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And Jesus replied and said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers. And they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down on the road, on that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, who was on a journey, came upon him, and when he saw him, felt compassion. And it says in verse 34, and came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them, and he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him, and whatever more you spend when I return, I will repay you. Which of these 3 do you think proved to be the neighbor, or to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? And he said, the one who showed mercy towards him. Then Jesus said to him, go and do the same. So this is going to help give us some perspective on how our attitude towards others should be. I think we're going to stop right there because we're about to get buzzed. So we'll, in our next class, we're going to pick up right here on this idea of our neighbor. Thank y'all for y'all's comments.